This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. This is the Relic Radio Show. Thanks for joining me this Tuesday. We're going to hear from Nightbeat first this week with their story from September 18th, 1950, titled Wanna Buy a Story. After that, it's Frontier Gentlemen and Aces and Eights, their story from October 12th, 1958.
Randy Stone. I cover the Night Beat for the Chicago Star. Stories start in many different ways. This one started with a girl and a full load of hate. You can't beat that combination for trouble.
Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone.
Sure, I've been known to complain about working the night beat, but just between you and me, I wouldn't trade with anyone. The theory about people at night, I think they look different and they act different. When the sun goes down, something happens inside. Something changes in the head and the heart of a man. I guess science would call it human chemistry. I call it human nature. In the dark of night, people are more vulnerable to romance and hate and temptation. A shy guy makes love, a pillar of roaring virtue gets roaring drunk, a coward beats his wife, men plot to steal, and they do steal, they plot to kill, and they kill. By day, face the facts, the all well-known cold, clear light of day. Let the sunshine boys face the facts, I'll see them in the making. You know, tracking down stories is a weird business. One night, I'll find a yarn right off, sitting out in the open, staring at me. Another night, I'll have to stalk the town like a bird dog. Tonight, I didn't want a story. I wanted a beer. So I went into Louis' saloon and drew myself a glass, fresh out of the tap. I was sitting there staring at her when she walked in and climbed up on the stool next to me. This little dame with the scared blue eyes.
I've been looking for you all night.
Now, what took you so long?
I went to a lot of places. Almost gave it up, and kid I know sells paper said you might be in here.
You mean you were looking for me in particular?
You're Randy Stone, aren't you?
Yeah.
I was looking for you in particular.
Oh, You want a beer? Louis in the back. I'll draw you one.
No, thanks. I want to talk to you. Private.
Well, right here is good. We're alone. Everyone seems to be nowhere tonight. Now, what are we going to talk about?
You're a reporter on the Chicago Star, aren't you, Mr. Stone?
Well, at the moment, my position with the Star is of minor importance.
What do you mean?
Nothing. Drop the Mr. Make it Randy. What do I call you?
Mary.
Well, yes, Mary, I am a reporter on the Chicago Star. Now, what's your story?
That's what I want to talk to you about. I've got a story.
Honey, you don't know it, but I've been waiting for you. Start talking. I'm listening hard.
It's not for free. I got to get paid for it.
Oh, well, that... this calls for music. Wait till I put a nickel in this. Sure you don't want a beer?
No, thanks.
I don't buy stories.
I think you'll buy this one.
Yeah, for how much?
$500.
$500? Look, Mary, you're a cute kid, but you're a dreamer. I don't make that much in a month. If you know who killed Cock Robin, I couldn't pay $500 for the story.
You could if I knew who killed Marty Crane.
Marty Crane, the gambler? I didn't know that he'd been killed.
Neither does anyone else.
Not even the police?
No.
Well, don't you think you ought to tell them? That's the kind of story they get real interested in.
Yeah, but they wouldn't pay me for it. I need $500, bad. They wouldn't give it to me, but you will. It'll mean a lot to the Star to get the story first. Mean a lot to you, too.
I haven't got $500.
You could get it from the paper.
You're crazy. Marty Crane dead? I don't believe it.
Okay, forget it.
All right, wait a minute. Let's not get sore. Maybe you better fill me in a little.
I don't know what you mean.
Well, all right, point number one. If nobody else knows Marty Crane is dead, how do you? And if you do, where's your proof?
I'll take you to him. You see him yourself, he'll be dead.
Well, that's pretty good proof. Murdered?
Yes, murdered.
And you'll tell me who did it?
I won't just tell you. I'll show you who did it.
Somebody come in?
Never mind, Lieutenant.
Oh, it's you, Randy. Okay.
You know, I could go to the police and tell them what you've told me. They'd find Crane's body and I'd get the story for nothing.
And so would every other newspaper in town.
Yeah. Well, say I did get the 500 and say you did prove Marty Crane had been murdered. I'd have to call the police then.
I know.
And if you told me who killed him, I'd have to spill that too.
You can do anything you want after you give me the money.
And when I do that?
After I give you Crane and his murderer.
I see.
It's got to be cash.
Now, you don't look like the kind of a girl who'd sell somebody out for dough. You must have a big hate on.
Only one person I hate. Marty Crane.
You know, you don't make sense. If you hate Crane, why rat on the guy that killed him?
I need the money.
You must need it awful bad.
You want to buy or don't you?
I don't know. Like I said, I haven't got 500, but like you said, I could get it. Maybe. I need some time.
You've got till midnight.
It won't take me that long. Let's make it an hour.
All right. I'll wait for you. Right here.
Randy Stone with rocks for brains. That's what I was thinking as I headed out of Louie's saloon. At the door, I turned around and looked at her, and something hurt in my throat. She looked like a little kid on that big, tall bar stool with her knees pulled up and her chin tucked under. All she needed was a dunce cap on her head. Or was I the one that raided the cap? Marty Crane was a crook and a louse. That innocent-looking little dame wanted to sell out the killer of a louse for 500 bucks. It didn't make sense. But I worked for a living, and if her story were true, we could scoop the town. It'd be worth 500. If. I had to weigh that big fat if against my job. I couldn't risk the paper's money on her word. I needed more to go on. Needed to protect my bet. I went down to police headquarters for a chat with Kowski.
Yeah, but you know as much about the heel as we do. Why all the sudden interest in Marty Crane?
Well, who knows, Kowski. He called it a hunch, maybe a rumor. I thought there might be something cooking with Crane.
If there is, we don't know about it.
You know anybody that would like to get rid of him?
Plenty of people, including yours truly. To quote the old man, Crane is a blot on the department's escutcheon, if you know what that means.
I knew it sounds profane.
He's slick like oil, this guy. One day he'll lose off in the wrong direction, we'll remove the blot. We'd have done it a couple of months ago if it hadn't been for Leonard Palmer.
Leonard Palmer?
Well, you don't know him?
Oh, yeah, sure, he's a lawyer.
He's a magician.
He defended Crane on a murder charge, didn't he?
Yeah, the Callahan boy. Crane shot him. Palmer got him off on a self-defense.
Oh, yes, I remember. They had to fumigate the courtroom after that trial. Well, thanks for the rundown, Kowski.
Oh, stick around. This place is like a mall.
No, I can't do it. But if my hunch pans out, that's probably where I'll see you later. At the morgue. The next move I made was so simple and logical that I gave myself a zero for not doing it in the first place. I found a phone booth and called Marty Crane's apartment. I want to talk to Marty Crane.
He ain't in.
Are you sure?
I said he ain't in, which means he ain't in.
You don't know where I can catch him, do you?
Who wants to know?
A friend of his. It's important.
I don't know where he is.
Now, listen, I got to get in touch with him for his sake. It's important.
I said I don't know where he is, which means I don't know where he is.
Well, can you think of any place he might be?
I don't know of no place.
Do you know anybody I might call that might know where he is? Well, you're a big help. Just tell me this. When did you last see him? How long ago?
Look, kid, I'm just a houseboy around here. I ain't the information window. If you got questions to ask, call his lawyer. Ask him anything you want, but don't ask me. I don't know nothing, which means I don't know nothing.
I gave myself another zero, but at least I'd gotten an idea from that fountain of information. I went through the book for Leonard Palmer's address. It was a very expensive address. The carpet sunk up to my ankles, but I made it across the room and eased into a lush-type sofa, one of those short deals they call a love seat. While I was sitting there, I wondered why.
Can I make you a drink?
No, thank you. It's a very fancy layout you've got here, Mr. Palmer. Very fancy.
I find law practice quite profitable.
Yeah, you've caught the hang of it, all right.
What can I do for you, Mr. Stone?
Tell me where to find Marty Crane.
Oh, is he lost?
Well, I don't know. I'm looking for him. His apartment said I should try you.
His apartment made an error. As you can see, he's not here.
But Maybe you know where he is.
I don't know what gave you that idea.
Well, you're his lawyer.
Precisely. However, my duties as such do not include that of nursemaid.
Don't let's get nasty.
I'm sorry you get that impression. If I were looking for Mr. Crane at this time of night, I'd try his various nightclubs.
Like, which ones?
I believe he owns several. The Red Dot, the Coronet. Oh, I really couldn't say. I'm afraid I can't be of any help to you at all.
If I told you that I thought something had happened to Marty Crane, would that change your attitude?
Not in the least.
You went to a lot of trouble to save his neck on that Callahan murder. It seems like you'd want to protect your efforts.
I was paid for my efforts.
It wouldn't bother you if I said maybe Crane was dead?
Not in the least. As an individual, he means nothing to me. Few people do. My main interest is money, and I'm free to admit it.
Know anybody that would want to kill him?
I dare say there are many people.
You included?
I? That's ridiculous. I'd lose a client. It would necessitate rearranging my income tax returns. Any more questions, Mr. Stone?
No more questions. I wanted answers to my questions, and I couldn't get any. I called nightclubs Crane owned, and some he didn't. No one had seen him. No one knew where he was, or if they did, they wouldn't say. Mary's story was beginning to smell true. Time was getting close, and I headed for the office. Now, I had to do the impossible. I had to get blood out of a turnip. A two-legged turnip named Hastings, my master, my dearly beloved managing editor.
$500? You are out of your mind.
Well, what have we got to lose?
Your job. This is a newspaper. You're paid to find stories, not to buy them.
Now listen, this is big. If it works, we'll scoop everybody.
If it works.
I've been all over town. Nobody has seen Crane. Everybody gives me the runaround. My hunch is strong that she's telling the truth. And look, if she isn't, if she doesn't produce, I don't give her the money. You'll get it back. How can you beat a deal like that?
Okay, Randy, okay. So I'll give you the $500, but it's against my principles. If you ever let it get around, I'll have you drawn and quartered.
Yes, sir, and, thank you. I don't know what to say. I'm, touched.
No, I am. I'm also an idiot.
I wouldn't say that.
We endeavor to maintain a schedule around here. Our jobs are more secure, and everyone is much happier when the paper comes out on time. I hate to bother you with humdrum, but it's late.
I know, you told me.
My lines are a dime a dozen.
I hear you. Just give me the dough. I'll be back with my story on time, or I'll kill myself. How's that?
Oh, that seems fair and reasonable. I like your attitude.
He's a lovely guy, Hastings. He's so dependable. If he says he's going to break your neck, you can depend on it. I'd stuck my neck out for breaking, and I knew it. How I got the $500 out of that heart of gold, I'll never know, but I had it cash in my pocket. And if you don't think I was worried, you're crazy. I ran all the way back to Louis' saloon. When I got there, a drunk was hanging on the jukebox. Louis was behind the bar. In front of the bar, nobody.
What's the matter, Randy? You don't look so good.
That girl that was here, where is she, Louis?
Yeah, she left about 5 minutes ago.
Oh, no.
She told me to be sure and tell you something. What the heck was it?
Yeah, Louis, what the heck was it?
Oh, yeah, she said to tell you she's coming back. She said, tell him I'll meet him here at exactly 10 minutes to 12.
10 minutes to 12? I can't wait that long.
Yeah, she must have it bad for this day.
I'd like to boil her in oil. I got a deadline to meet. It won't wait. I stake my job on that little dame.
All right, Louie. Come on, Nichols.
Don't bother me.
If I could only find her, Louie, I'd find her. I don't even know her name.
It's Callahan.
Huh?
Mary Callahan.
You know her?
Sure. She's a nice kid, so don't yap about her in my saloon. I used to be friends with her brother, Danny Callahan. Got shot a couple of months ago.
Wait a minute. Say that again. This girl's the sister of Danny Callahan?
Yeah.
The Danny Callahan that was shot by Marty Crane?
I and a lot of other people around here say he was murdered by Mary Crane. Smart lawyer got him off on self-defense.
Yeah. I know that story. I also know I gotta find that girl. She's walking around somewhere with my future in her mean little hands.
NBC is bringing you Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone. The chimes are ringing and laughing in anticipation of the riotous antics promised by two favorites in your NBC fall lineup. The first is Bob Hope, and he returns to the air over most of these NBC stations on Tuesday, October 3rd, with more laughs and timely satire in the unique rapid-fire Hope style. The day after Bob Hope's return, the hilarious quiz game You Bet Your Life makes its NBC debut, featuring that master of the ad-lib and clever quip, Groucho Marx. Bob Hope, October 3rd, and Groucho Marx, October 4th. And now back to Nightbeat and Randy Stone.
I was in the soup and it was hot and I didn't like it. If Mary Callahan was telling the truth, if Marty Crane really had been murdered, some other paper was sure to smell out the story while I was cooling my heels in Louie's bar. My editor would scream like a banshee and I'd be sweating out unemployment, all because I took the word of a little blue-eyed stool pigeon who promised to sell out Marty Crane's murderer for $500. I had the $500 in my pocket. I think I must have put my brains in my pocket, too. Louie stood there watching me burn.
I don't get you, Randy. What are you sore at Mary about? Like I told you, she's a nice kid.
Maybe you don't know her like I do.
What did she do to you?
She welched on a deal. She said she'd wait for me right here.
She said she'd be back. I told you that. She'll be back.
At midnight.
10 hours.
Well, I can't wait. I got a deadline to beat. No story.
It's barely an hour till midnight, Randy.
You don't know how mad Hastings can get in an hour. Some other paper scoops me out on that story. I'm a has-been. Oh, that dame, I could kill her.
I repeat, she's a nice kid.
Yeah, yeah. Look, Louie. This brother of hers that Marty Crane shot, Mary...
Yeah, he was crazy about him.
That's unbelievable.
What do you mean? He was a nice guy.
I don't mean that. I mean, it's unbelievable what some people will do for money.
I don't follow your conversation.
Well, don't try. I gotta find that girl. Any idea where she'd go?
I don't know. Maybe she went home.
Where's home? You know where she lives?
Yeah, but in the mood you're in, I don't know if I ought to tell you.
Come on, Louie. I won't hit her. I'd like to, but for you, I'll skip the pleasure. I give you my word. After some gentle but firm persuasion, Louie took my word and gave me her address. I didn't have any trouble with the carpets in that place. There weren't any. Up 4 flights of stairs, it groaned and shuddered with every step. The light in the hall was so dim, I had to strike a match to read the number on the door. It checked with the one Louie gave me, so I knocked. I heard someone shuffle across the room inside. The door opened. A little old woman stood there peering at me. Before she even said anything, just the look in her eyes told me that everything wasn't quite right with her.
I can't see you very well. Are you someone I know?
I'm afraid not. I'm looking for Mary Callahan.
Are you a friend of Mary's?
Well, yes. Is she here?
I'm Mary's mother. Won't you come inside?
Oh, thank you, thank you. My name is Randy Stone, Mrs. Callahan. I'm sorry to call so late.
Please sit down.
No, thank you, really. I can't stay. I just wanted to speak to Mary. Is she home?
I'm worried about Mary. Are you a friend of Danny's?
No. I didn't know Danny.
Well, that's too bad. Danny was such a nice boy to know.
I'm very anxious to see Mary, Mrs. Callahan. Isn't she here?
No.
Do you have any idea where I can find her?
Did you say you knew Danny?
No. I didn't know Danny.
Danny's dead, you know. I expect you read about him in the papers.
Yeah.
It wasn't true. Danny couldn't have tried to kill anyone. Not Danny. It was the lawyer that made people think he did. What was that lawyer's name?
Palmer. Leonard Palmer.
Yes, of course. Leonard Palmer. He's not dead, is he? He's a very clever man. What was it you wanted to know about Mary?
I'm trying to find her. I've got to talk to her.
She was here.
When? How long ago?
Not long. She stayed a minute.
You know where she went?
That's the picture of Danny right there. He is a fine-looking boy, isn't he?
Yes, you bet he is.
Yes. He was a brave boy. He knew things about Marty Crane. That's why Crane shot him. And that lawyer made everybody believe that Danny had tried to shoot him first. Clever man. What was his name?
Please, Mrs. Callahan, did Mary say where she was going?
She said she had an appointment with someone at 12 o'clock, and if she was late, I shouldn't worry. But I am worried.
Well, the appointment was with me. I was hoping I could catch her before then.
Oh, that's too bad. Maybe she's still at Mr. Green's.
Mr. Green's?
I remember she said something about going by Mr. Green's to pick up something. My memory isn't very good since then.
Where is Mr. Green's?
At a pawn shop down the street. That's where Danny was killed, you know. Mr. Green's pawn shop.
Mr. Green's pawn shop was closed up and dark, but way in the back I could see a sliver of light under the door. I made a lot of racket with the front door, and finally the one in back opened, and Mr. Green came staggering towards me. At first, I thought he was drunk. But when he let me in, I got a good look at him. I knew different. He'd been beaten half to death.
Who are you? What do you want?
Well, you better sit down. You don't look like you're going to make it. Who did this to you?
Nobody. I don't know. I don't know anything.
You didn't beat yourself up like that. Who did it?
What do you want here? Who are you?
I'm looking for Mary Callahan. Her mother said she was coming here.
I was afraid maybe you...
Go on. Afraid maybe I was what?
No, Mary was here a little while ago.
I keep on just missing. She didn't say where she was going, did she?
No, she didn't say anything about that, I remember. All I remember, she told me after tonight, I won't have to worry anymore. I won't have to be afraid.
Afraid of what?
You're not from the police, are you?
No. I told you, Mrs. Callahan sent me here. I'm looking for Mary. Why don't you tell me what happened to you? Who beat you up? What are you afraid of?
They tell me to leave town. I'll get worse next time. How can I leave? I've never been anyplace else. Where would I go?
Who is they?
Marty Crane's boy.
Marty Crane? What have you got to do with him? Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. He shot Danny Callahan here in your shop, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he murdered Danny right here in this room. And I seen him do it, but I couldn't tell. He said he would kill me if I did. But I don't care anymore. I might as well tell, get it over with. Might as well be dead is the way I am. Where could I go?
Now, you listen to me. You try to pull yourself together. You're going to be all right, I promise you. Now, right now, I've got to know if Marty Crane did this to you. Was he here tonight? Did you see him?
I don't know. Maybe he was. Three or four, maybe
was
four.
Was Crane one of them? I've got to know.
It happened so fast, he might have been, but I don't know. I can't remember.
I got the poor old guy to bed and went back to Louis' place. I didn't know what else to do. It was 20 to 12 and I was nowhere. I called Hastings. He gave me what was left of his mind. Either I got right in there with a story or I needn't bother to get in at all. Somehow I didn't care much. I kept thinking about that poor, crazy Mrs. Callahan and Danny and that old, beaten man. Louis poured me a beer and I was wondering how I could drown myself in it when a cab pulled up in front and Mary Callahan got out. She stood at the door and motioned me to come outside.
Well, did you get the money?
Yes, I got it.
Cash?
Yeah, but you're a little late.
What do you mean? You're not going to back up. Not now, you can't.
I'm all out of time. I got a deadline to beat. I stake my job on your story.
I stake my life on it. You'll have your story in 10 minutes. I swear you will. Please, get out of here.
All of a sudden, I don't know if I want the story. Job or no job.
What are you giving me?
I went out looking for you tonight. I found a lot of things that are hard to believe, like your mother and a little guy named Green.
You're wasting time.
I guess my guts aren't as strong as yours, but after what I've seen, I think anybody who would kill Marty Crane is a hero. I don't get you at all. Your mother's half off her head, your own brother is dead, and you tell who killed a skunk like Crane for a lousy $500.
I don't care what you think of me. I didn't ask you to like me. That wasn't in the deal. I said I'd prove Crane was dead, and I tell you who killed him. You said you'd pay me $500 for it. I'm ready to keep my word. Now, what are you going to do?
Okay. Go on, get in the cab. The cab took us to one of Crane's nightclubs, the Coronet Club. I followed Mary upstairs to an office with a door marked private. She told me to wait, then she went over and knocked on the door. I heard a girl laughing as the door opened, and there stood the dead man. Marty Crane himself in person, alive and leering.
Well, Mary Callahan, right on time.
Yeah, right on time.
You know, I was surprised when you called, said you wanted to see me. I'm even more surprised you kept our appointment. But pleasantly so. Come on in, dear.
Won't it be crowded? Well, I wanted to see you alone.
Yes, of course. Doris was just leaving, weren't you, darling?
Oh, but naturally.
You say so, darling. It's all yours, honey. Just hope you're fleet-footed.
That's enough, Doris. I'll call you later, maybe.
I won't hold my breath. Shall we go inside?
Yeah, sure.
Well, I don't get it.
Well, hello.
Uh-huh.
What can I do for you?
Oh, not a thing.
Oh, too bad. You looking for somebody up here?
No, not anymore. That was Marty Crane I just saw, wasn't it?
Sure was.
Would you say there was anything dead about him?
Oh, Marty dead?
Mm.
No, not Marty. I'm dead about him. He's the life of the party, that guy. Almost too alive to suit me. He's... What's going on around here?
Get out of my way, will you? Mary.
Yeah.
Mary, you crazy kid.
Here's your story, Randy Stone. He's dead, isn't he?
Yeah, he's dead.
And it's plain to see who did it, isn't it?
Why, Mary? Why did you do it?
I had to. Somebody had to. I've been wanting to even up with him for a long time. But I had to have that $500 first. I had a hard time figuring out how to get it. But it's mine now, isn't it?
What good is it going to do you now?
It's going to save my neck. The same way he saved his when he killed Danny. It was self-defense. Nobody saw it happen. Danny Palmer is a very clever man. He can prove it was self-defense, and I've got his price. $500 cash in advance.
Well, I'll make my deadline. We'll scoot to town. Hastings is a happy man, but I'm not. I wonder who's going to have to tell Mary that she's not going to get away with it. I don't like the story. I wish it had never happened. But it's written, and a lot of people will read it, and in a couple of weeks, it'll be forgotten. Only I'll remember, and I'll always wish I'd known first what was really going on behind those scared blue eyes. Copy, boy.
Oh, just a minute, Frank. You know, we have a distinguished newspaper woman here as our guest tonight.
I certainly do, Don. Miss Agnes Underwood, the only woman city editor of a metropolitan newspaper in the entire United States.
Not only is she the city editor of the Los Angeles Herald Express, Frank, but Miss Underwood has also written a book.
I know that, too. It's called Newspaper Woman, telling about her own experiences as a reporter. Welcome to radio, Miss Underwood. It's an honor to share a microphone with you.
Thank you, Frank. But tonight, I'm the one who's handing out the honors.
Oh?
Sincerely, Frank, on behalf of Theta Sigma Phi, National Fraternity for Women in Journalism, may I present you with this scroll and our compliments for your honest and convincing portrayal of a newspaper man on this show, Night Beat. Also, honors from the profession to both you and Miss Patricia Neal for your portrayals of a newspaper man and newspaper woman in the Warner Brothers motion picture, Three Secrets.
Well, thank you, Miss Underwood. Thank you very much.
And Frank,
That's
Aggie to a co-worker.
Okay, Aggie. And I know Pat Neal will be just as thrilled as I am with the award.
Good night, Frank.
Good night, Aggie.
Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy, is produced and directed by Warren Lewis and edited by Larry Marcus. Tonight's story was written by Marty Wilkinson, with music by Frank Worth. Portions were transcribed. The part of Mary was played by Betty Moran. Others in tonight's cast were Peggy Weber, Larry Dobkin, Lou Krugman, Jack Crucian, and Stan Waxman. Frank Lovejoy will next be seen in Milton Sperling's production, Three Secrets, released by Warner Brothers. Listen next week at this time and every week as Randy Stone searches through the city for the strange stories waiting for him in the darkness. Night Beat came to you from Hollywood.
In a card game, aces and eights are known throughout the West as a dead man's hand. There's a good reason for it, and this is the story of how the hand got its name.
Frontier Gentlemen. Herewith an Englishman's account of life and death in the West. As a reporter for the London Times, he writes his colorful and unusual stories. But as a man with a gun, he lives and becomes a part of the violent years in the new territories. In just 1 minute, we will bring you this latest report from the Frontier Gentleman. You know, the couple next door, simple, normal people whose ordinary experiences seem so much more amusing than our own. Well, if you haven't met these delightful young marrieds, by all means, make their acquaintance tomorrow and keep up with them every weekday when they come your way over CBS Radio. Alan Bunce and Peg Lynch, who play the couple next door, are heard over most of these same stations Monday through Friday. Now, starring John Daner, this is the story of J.B. Kendall, Frontier Gentleman.
I had gone into the store of an outfitter named Judd Scott in order to purchase a new pair of boots. His was a thriving place of business in Deadwood, and I had to wait a good half an hour before Mr. Scott was able to attend my needs. He was an affable, if somewhat talkative, gentleman, and his boots were first rate.
Sir, how's that feel? Seems right snug to me. You walk around in them.
Well, the left one might be a little tight. Yes, here in the heel.
Oh, she'll ease up, mister. Gotta give the leather a chance to know you. Of course, now, if you got the time, I'm kind of pressed for the next couple of weeks, but if you got the time, I could make you a pair, finest in Dakota Territory.
I'm not sure how long I'll be here. No, I think these will do.
Yeah, take it off. I'll work it in softer for you. So, you're a newspaper correspondent, huh? We've had them come through, but none from England. Must be pretty interesting in your line of work.
Yes, it is, quite.
Guess folks back there get a lot of pleasure reading about things hereabouts.
You mean in Deadwood? Yes, I imagine it's interesting reading. At least I hope it is.
Heck, a long time for a man to run out of things to write about. You met Wild Bill Hickok yet?
Hickok? No.
Well, now, that surprises me. You heard of him, ain't you?
Well, I think so.
Oh, there's talk that folks around's wanting to put him up for marshal in Deadwood.
Really?
Fact. Ask Jack McCall, he knows. He told me.
Where would I be likely to find him?
Hickok ain't seen for a while. McCall, he's generally down to Carl Mann's saloon.
I bought the boots and then walked down the street to Carl Mann's saloon. Even though it was early, I was rather surprised to see that the place was practically empty. A hatchet-faced woman was drinking at the bar, and I found McCall, a broken-nosed, sullen-looking man, sitting at a table, playing a game of solitaire.
Yeah, that's me. Who's asking to know?
And J.B. Kendall.
What might your business be, J.B. Kendall?
Well, Judd Scott mentioned your name. He runs the general store down the street.
Judd Scott?
Yes, that's right.
Well, how come you want to talk with me?
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm a newspaper correspondent. I write stories about what I see in the West.
What kind of story are you writing about in Deadwood?
Wild Bill Hickok. You know him?
Why don't you ask her?
Hmm?
Over at the bar. Calamity Jane. Figures she knows him better than most.
Well, thank you, I will. Perhaps I can buy you a drink after.
Sure, suit yourself. I ain't going nowhere.
Miss Jane?
You talk to me. The name's Calamity. No miss on it. Calamity Jane.
I'm sorry. I'm J.B. Kendall. A gentleman over there mentioned that you were a good friend of Wild Bill Hickok.
Who? That ain't no gentleman. That's a stinking pig by the name of Jack McCall. You've been sitting with him. Don't foul up the air around me. Hit the trail, mister.
Well, I was hoping you could introduce me to Mr. Hickok.
Hey, you English?
Yes.
Thought so. Knew an English feller down in Abilene. Wouldn't quit riding herd on me. Had to shoot him.
Oh.
New in town, ain't you?
Yeah, just arrived.
You ain't friend of McCall?
Oh, no, I only met him a few minutes ago.
What brings you?
Well, I'm a writer. Newspaper articles for the London Times.
You want to know about Hickok, huh? Guess you heard about me and Wild Bill, huh?
Oh, yes.
Fastest man with a gun you'll ever see. I ain't too bad myself, but I ain't nothing to Wild Bill. Come on over to the table, bring the bottle, and I'll tell you about me and Wild Bill.
Calamity Jane was a strange, almost masculine-looking woman, hard and rough-voiced. She told me of her exploits as a scout with General Crook's army in the war against the Sioux. But most of the time, she spoke of Hickok. About a half an hour had passed when I noticed Jack McCall get up from his table and come toward us.
Yes, sir. What Wild Bill done in Abilene, there ain't another man could have handled.
Miss, I thought she was going to buy me a drink.
Oh, not just now, Mr. McCall. I'm talking to the lady.
But I see it's mostly listening. Ain't nobody gets to talk much around her.
McCall! You want me to put your eyeballs out with this bottle? You open that barn door of yours just once more.
Dan'l, you come on down to the Boot Hill Saloon when you're through. I'll tell you the truth about that female polecat. Now, wait.
One of these days, me or Wild Bill's gonna pump that coyote full of lead. Except he ain't worth wasting a ball on. He ain't no good. His pals is worse. You ever run into Tim Brady or Johnny Varnes, you watch your step, mister. Them's two of the boys, along with McCall, that Wild Bill's gonna run out of this town when he gets to be marshal.
Where's Wild Bill now?
Up in the hills, working his claim. Him and his partner, Colorado Charlie. He ought to be back by tomorrow. He'd like to meet you, mister. Wild Bill always had a liking for you newspaper fellas. Oh, now, watch your hurry. Sit down. We'll split another bottle.
Oh, thank you. I think I'd better get settled. Wash some of this Dakota dust off me.
Ha, ha, what a dude. All right, go on up to the hotel. Tell them Calamity Jane sent you, and if they don't give you the best room, I'll shoot up the place.
The recommendation was most effective. I got the best room in the hotel. 2 hours later, in spite of Calamity Jane's warning, I wandered down to the Boot Hill Saloon. I was curious about McCall and what he might have to say about Calamity and Wild Bill Hickok. I found him there, very drunk. He was talking to a heavy-set man who was chewing on an unlit cigar. McCall greeted me as an old friend.
What do you say, Kendall? You had enough of that female windbag, huh? Tim? Tim, this is the fellow I was telling you about. Kendall's his name.
Mr. Kendall, how are you? Tim Brady.
Brady? I owe Mr. McCall a drink. I came down to settle my debt.
That's real fine of you, Kendall. Jim Kendall's gone to Deadwood to write a story about Wild Bill Hickok, the new marshal of Deadwood.
You go get yourself a drink, McCall.
Sure, Jim. The new marshal of Deadwood.
Please, take the chair, Kendall. I wouldn't pay no heed to what McCall says, not when he gets too much whiskey in him.
Did he say something?
About Hickok being marshal. Don't you believe it. The fellas around here, they don't want his kind. You go writing in your paper about a thing like that, you're going to have to turn right around and write it ain't true.
And he's not going to get the job?
Well, now, I'll tell you. He does a lot of ear greasing, well, like that probate mayor, Calamity Jane. But all the things you hear are just a lot of brag. Hickok never plugged a man unless the feller's back was turned. Now, I was down to Abilene when he dragged out Phil Cole. Was the worst thing you ever seen, shot him in the back. And by mistake, he goes and kills his own pal, Mike Williams. No, sir, Deadwood ain't going to put up a man like that for Marshall. You think so?
I don't know. I suppose it depends on how many want him.
There you are. Well, there's a lot of them miners up in the hills. They're the ones. They figure he's a real big man. They heard all them crazy stories about him. You want to know what I think?
Might be very interesting.
Well, now, I don't think he lasts 2 minutes as a marshal before somebody shot the daylights out of him. Yes, sir. Best thing for Hickok to do is to get out of Deadwood and stay out. Now, you see him, you tell him that.
Of all leading filters, cigarettes, Kent filters best, Kent filters best. It makes good sense when you smoke Kent, Kent filters best. of all of the brands of cigarettes. Kent tastes the best. Kent tastes the best. A richer taste than all the rest. Kent filters best. It makes good sense when you smoke Kent. Of all leading filter cigarettes, Kent filters best.
The next night, Calamity Jane introduced me to Wild Bill Hickok. He looked older, more tired than I had imagined him. As we sat in his room, I noticed that he blinked his eyes, rubbed them, and seemed quite nervous, constantly glanced toward the door. Calamity had gone out to buy some food.
Me and Colorado Charlie, we had a rough week up in the hills. Kind of feels good to get back. You ever done any mining, Kendall?
Oh, very little.
Well, the best way is to get somebody else to do the work for you. Well, what do you think of Deadwood? Not much like London, I'll bet.
No, it isn't.
Yeah. Do a little cleaning up like I did in Hayes City, Abilene. We'll have a right nice little town.
When do you expect to begin as marshal?
Any day now. Boys are getting things moving.
I saw a man yesterday, Tim Brady.
Brady?
He asked me to give you a message. Best thing for Hickok to do is to get out of Deadwood and stay out.
That's what he said.
Yeah.
You know why? They're afraid of me. They know what's going to happen after I get sworn in. I run them out. If they don't run, we have a showdown. Brady and his pal Vaughn's. They ain't got stomach for that.
I gather they're the somewhat unsavory element in Deadwood.
Mister, you ain't just milking pigeons. Them miners up in those hills, they'd be dead ducks for Brady and his gang, wasn't for me. This is the worst mining camp in the territory. Ain't been no law here since it started. Brady don't want none. That's how come the miners want me for marshal. Protection.
I'm surprised he hasn't tried to get rid of you before this.
That Jayhawker knows what had happened to him in a shoot-up. He ain't likely to try nothing. Fella like that gets somebody else to do his dirty.
Hey! Oh, it's only me, Bill. Put away the gun.
Told you, Charlie ought to knock.
I keep forgetting.
So here's J.B. Kendall. Going to write a story about me for an English paper.
Yeah, I run into Calamity down at Carl's place, and she told me. Nice to meet you, Kendall.
And you, sir?
My old pal, Charlie Utter.
Colorado Charlie's good enough.
Kendall's been talking to Brady.
That's so? Rest your saddle, Bill. You make me tired, Stan.
Brady says I ought to get out of town.
Oh, he'd like that fine.
Yeah, he'd like that. Well, I guess I'll go wash up before Calamity gets back. Charlie, you staying around?
Yeah, I thought maybe we'd get down to Carl's later and play some cards.
All right.
I'll be right back.
Sure.
Got a lot on his mind, says Wild Bill. He ain't usually like this.
He seems to have trouble with his eyes.
Oh, you noticed it.
Yes.
I wouldn't want you to say nothing in front of Bill. He's been scared. He's going blind. Things sure don't seem like the old days. Oh, I gotta get these boots off. My feet's killing me.
How old is he?
But Wild Bill, let me see, 39. Of course, to hear him talk, you'd think he's closer to 60. I sure do fret over him sometimes. Always talking about dying, this and that. Ain't like the old days. He sure was a rip snorter. Oh, well, maybe when he gets to be marshal, everything will be like it always was.
Calamity Jane came in with the food, and behind her, Bill Hickok. It was a strange supper. Both Colorado Charlie and Calamity kept up a stream of conversation, anecdotes singing the praise of Hickok's past accomplishments, But the atmosphere was strained. The man with the long hair didn't say very much. Afterwards, Charlie Utter invited me to accompany them to the saloon. I noticed that Hickok was reluctant. Possibly he had a feeling, a warning of what was to come. It was 8 o'clock when we arrived at Carl Mann's saloon and sat down at the card table.
Charlie, honey, change seats with me. I ain't sitting with my back to the door.
Oh, Wild Bill, you're getting worse than an old woman.
Maybe so, but that's the way it is. I like to see what's coming in.
Well, here, take my place if you like.
No, sir. All he wants is a catbird seat. That's how come he's always winning. You ain't moving, Bill.
Ha, ha, ha! You got the right idea, Charlie. Wild Bill, you got your seat, and that's the way it's going to be. Carl, bring us a bottle of whiskey and a deck of cards. Marshall Hickok's going to be the big loser tonight.
Who's the man with the genial good humor, fairly twinkling away behind the outsized eyeglasses? Robert Q, that's who. Who's the man whose mischievous variety show is yours to enjoy every weekday evening and Saturdays in the daytime, too? Robert Q, that's who. Tomorrow evening, again, over most of these same stations, enjoy CBS Radio's refreshing Robert Q. Lewis Show with its music, songs, and fun. It was a friendly game, and we could see Hickok beginning to relax. He was a good player and held more than his share of winning hands. But while the game went on, there was something happening down the street in the Boot Hill Saloon. We didn't know it then, but after it was too late, we heard what had taken place. 3 men sat in a back room, one of them drinking heavily. This was Jack McCall. The other 2 were Tim Brady and Johnny Varnes, the leaders of the Toughs in Deadwood.
Telling you, Jack, you'll be a big man.
Why, sure. They'll look at you when you walk down the street. You know, they'll say, there goes Jack McCall.
Yeah, sure.
Why, he killed Wild Bill Hickok.
Now, you hear what Johnny says?
Yeah. Give me another drink, boy.
Why, sure.
You know,
give him a drink.
He's in Carl's place right now. You could get him easy.
Might not be so easy.
Oh, Jack, you ain't afraid, are you?
Oh, I ain't afraid.
Are you sure?
I ain't afraid, but it just won't be so easy, that's all.
Of course, we could get somebody else to do it. We just figured, now, Tim and me. No, we figured that you was a man for the job.
I ain't saying I won't do it. See?
Now, Johnny, let me tell you, you know what we could do?
What?
We could maybe get that there newspaper fellow. You know, Kendall. he could write something about Jack in his paper.
Sure.
How'd you like that, Jack? In an English paper, it says there, Jack McCall shoots down Wild Bill Hickok. Why, you could go on the stage and make a lot of money over that. Sure.
He's right down the street, Jack. I seen him myself. And you know what? He's sitting with his back to the door.
Well, now, you listen. How come if you was there, you didn't plug him yourself?
Oh, Johnny, it ain't no use. He don't understand.
No, all right, forget it.
Forget it, Jack.
Now, look.
Go on, get out of here.
I'm just asking him, that's all. Just tell me, huh? How come?
Because Calamity Jane and Colorado Charlie's with him. If they seen me, they'd know something was wrong.
That's right.
But not you, Jack. They wouldn't figure you drawing on Hickok.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Sure.
Well,
that's
all I want to know. I just want to know is why, that's all.
Well, Jack, what do you say?
Well, sure. Sure, why not? Sure.
Yeah. Huh? All right, give him a gun, Johnny. Don't you miss, boy, here.
Three kings.
He's beat you, Wild Bill.
Yeah, be a son of a gun if he is. I had you pegged for no more than 2 fair.
Yeah, Kendall ain't the best player I seen, but he's sure a lucky one. All right, peel him out, Calamity.
Yeah, all right.
You know, I knew a fellow once down in Hayes City. He drew 2 cards to a royal. Luckiest thing I ever seen.
Well, that's a local thing for a man to do.
Oh, sure it was. He took 1 look at his hand, he keeled over, plum dead.
You know, I had a hand something like that. I won a Chinese girl with it a few months ago in Deer Lodge.
Right? Chinese? Mm-hmm. No kidding. What'd you do with her?
Oh, I gave her to a man I knew. He married her.
I'll open for $1.
Wait, wait, wait. Staying.
Staying. Me too.
I ain't proud. There. Cards?
Well, I'll take three, Clement.
Kendall?
Two, please.
Give me one. Now, there's a man who's going to drop dead if he pulls it right.
How about you, Charlie?
Oh, let me see. Two.
Gila takes three.
There's an honest woman.
That's one thing I ain't and never hoped to be. You're a bet, Wild Bill.
All right, hey, friends. I tell you, I'll make this just a little rough on you. $2.
All right, I call.
Not me. I ain't dropping dead, neither. I'll see you.
I'm a sucker. All right. What have you got, Wild Bill?
The prettiest two pair you ever seen. Aces and eights.
Wild Bill Hickok slumped forward on the table. He still had the winning smile on his face, and the cards crumpled in his tightening fist. It was Calamity Jane who found Jack McCall. He was hiding in a butcher shop nearby. Colorado Charlie and I dragged him away before she had a chance to use the meat cleaver she was holding. We found 6 cartridges in McCall's gun. The only one to fire was the first, the one that killed Hickok. The other 5 were defective. Before I left Deadwood, McCall was tried for murder. But Brady and Barnes must have chosen the jury themselves, because the final verdict was not guilty.
Frontier Gentlemen was written, produced, and directed by Anthony Ellis and stars John Daner as J.B. Kendall. Featured in the cast were Lawrence Dobkin, Virginia Gregg, Jack Moyles, Jack Crucian, Stacey Harris, and Vic Perrin. Join us again next week for another report from the Frontier Gentlemen. Bud Sewell speaking.
That's the Relic Radio Show for this week. You can find more from Nightbeat, Frontier Gentlemen, past episodes of this podcast, and all of the other podcasts, and a Shoutcast stream, all at relicradio.com. Lots to listen to there, all for free, thanks to your support. If you'd like to help out, visit donate.relicradio.com or click on one of the links on the website. My thanks, as always, to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me this week. Be back again next Tuesday with another episode of the Relic Radio Show.